Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Nobody moves like Mick Jagger. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today on the show, a look at the rock star you hate to love. Plus, a live performance from songwriter and guitarist Eleanor Friedberger, best known for her work with the Fiery Furnaces. But to begin, this song, Moves Like Jagger, from Maroon 5 and Christina Aguilera, is on top of the Billboard Hot 100 chart. But many Rolling Stones fans would say that in recent years, Mick Jagger has suffered a crisis of cool. The answer to that age-old question, who would you rather be, Keith, or Mick, now seems obvious after the runaway success of bandmate Keith Richards' 2010 autobiography called Life. Now, a new book by music writer Mark Spitz puts forth a view of Jagger that just might turn public opinion back around. The book is called Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue, and Mark Spitz is here with us on Soundcheck. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me back.
Are we having a Mick Jagger moment? I mean, here's Maroon 5 invoking him and in the video,
I know.
Brief clips of him dancing.
That's a great song, by the way. I mean, I guess they're really inspired. And I saw someone on Dancing with the Stars was doing the Jagger moves. I can't remember who. I think it was Carson Kressley.
You're on your own there.
Yeah.
I can't help you there.
None of that was happening when I started the book 2 years ago. He was definitely in a ditch,
yeah,
culturally. So it's kind of cool to see his cool stock rise, as it were. And
you can actually see the video on our webpage at wnyc.org/soundcheck. All right, the book is called Jagger. Right up front, you know, you are upfront about the fact that, you know, Keith Richards wrote this book, and if Jagger was in a ditch, here was Keith Richards throwing garbage into the ditch on top of him. Do you see this as a way to right a perceived wrong with this book?
I like an underdog story, and it's hard to think of Mick Jagger, this, you know, multimillionaire, jet-setting rock star for almost 50 years, as an underdog. But that's kind of what was interesting to me about it, is how does someone who, for my mother's generation, was the epitome of, like, rebel cool, mm-hmm, become such a easily dismissed establishment figure almost, and is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if it's fair, if there are moments in the book where he was acting, you know, kind of in a manner that was, let's say, you know, I don't know what I can say on
like a jerk.
I say so, you know, but it took
me a moment too to find a word,
right,
I could actually use
but
on the
there
radio.
But there were innovations, I think, that were unheralded. There was a good wealth of cool there that I don't think he was flogging for us in the same way that Keith sort of effortlessly does,
mm,
you know.
Well, you know, in the wake of the Keith Richards autobiography called Life, David Remnick, in his review in The New Yorker, wrote that Richards was the, quote, musical soul of the Stones. And in fact, I'm just looking at some of the early comments on our webpage. Antonio in Mexico City writes, Mick is the combination of looks and brains. Nobody sings like him. Keith is still the gut and soul of the Stones. That idea of Keith as the soul, how do you...
That is a fixed idea in the shared consciousness in terms of how we look at the Rolling Stones, and I kind of wanted to see if that was true or not. And what I found time and time again was that it was just too reductive. It was too simple,
mm-hmm,
and that there were elements of mixed behavior and mixed creative expression and mixed decisions over the years that if I just covered his name and asked you who did that, Mick or Keith, you would say Keith, but it was Mick, like, time and again. So I'm not sure how, you know, I didn't set out to kind of, like, right wrongs with this book.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of tried to sort of lay everything out on the table and kind of examine it,
yeah,
and let people draw their own conclusions. It's not an anti-Keith book.
Right.
I love Keith Richards.
But if you were to, I mean, what you said just a moment ago, if you were to play for somebody the beginning of Brown Sugar,
sure,
classic hit by the Rolling Stones, I think 99 out of 100 people would say, that's got to be Keith.
That's a perfect example.
Right. And it is?
It's Mick Jagger wrote that riff. Yeah.
Stones, Brown Sugar from the 1971 album Sticky Fingers, and while it is credited as Jagger and Richards, as all Stones songs are, this one is Mick's.
The one that got away, Keith says in his book.
In his book, he says, Keith Richards says, I'm the riff master. The only one I missed and that Mick Jagger got was Brown Sugar, and I'll tip my hat there. So he tips his hat. And then more hurling of epithets and nicknames. Brenda is a nickname that he has for Mick Jagger, beginning, I guess, in the 80s or something.
Yeah, it was named after Brenda Jagger, who is a historical fiction writer. You know, this is typical schoolboy stuff, you know, kind of calling him, literally calling him a girl,
right.
Talking about the size of his, you know, his...
His manhood.
His manhood, and, you know, I mean...
Now, how do you refute that?
Well, I felt like it became such a scandal, and so it is almost like I called it Todgergate because he said it was a tiny todger, which I guess is some old English slang. And I felt like it would be silly to ignore it because it just kind of took on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
But I approached it like a trial lawyer. You know, I just went out and found evidence. You know, there's photos that Anita Pallenberg took in 1968 from the set of Performance, the Mick's debut film in which they co-starred. And, you know, you look at it and, it is what it is. I mean, I wouldn't call it tiny. I wouldn't call it gigantic. I would call it, you know, average, let's say.
Okay.
And but Anita... average todger doesn't make for good copy. It doesn't sell books.
Right. Anita Pallenberg, of course, would have had some... access to both his and Keith's and Brian Jones's
absolutely.
Todgers
yes.
during the day. Did you try and interview Mick for the book?
No, I kind of figured that it was not going to happen.
You've interviewed him before.
I interviewed him once for Spin Magazine when he was promoting an album called Goddess in the Doorway, which Keith dismissed as a name I can't say on the radio, uh-huh. In the Doorway. And, you know, it was the type of interview that he does now. He does 10-minute interviews on the topic of whatever it is he's promoting and doesn't go backwards and doesn't go forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're ushered away. This was a telephone one, and it was like, thank you very much. And then, he'll call the next journalist and do the same thing. The only time he ever sat down in the past 15 years for an in-depth interview with no time constraints that wasn't part of a junket was with Jan Wenner for the cover of Rolling Stone in 1995. So,
mm-hmm.
So I knew going in, and it was sort of liberating in a way that I wasn't going to get him. So I had to make sure I got other people who were really good to kind of shed light on this whole, you know, on the dude.
Well, yeah. Now you mentioned this 1995 sit down interview we did with Jan Wenner of Rolling Stone. In this clip from that interview, Jagger talks about the origins of the Stones' classic Sympathy for the Devil.
I knew that I wanted to do it and get it down, you know, and I hadn't written a lot of songs on my own. So, you know, when you don't, you have to teach. When you write songs, you know, you have to first like them yourself, but then you have to make everyone else like them because you can force them to play it. Mm-hmm. But you can't force them to like it. And if they like it, they're going to do a much better job than if they're just playing because they sort of feel that obligated.
Mm-hmm.
They get inspired. And you get inspired, and the whole thing, process, that's what being in a band's about, rather than hiring people.
Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and its ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank. When the blitzkrieg raged and the bodies stank. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh yeah, I was puzzling you.
Sympathy for the Devil from the Stones' 1968 album Beggar's Banquet. And Mick Jagger says that aside from some tempo suggestions from Keith, that this is also basically just his song. So going back, Mark Spitz, to the idea that, you know, Keith is the soul of the band, and that you know, Mick has somehow been sort of aloof from it.
The scheming.
Not borne out in the facts.
Well, you can. I mean, there was a magic to the Stones at that point, and you can see this song coming together in the Godard film, which was released as Sympathy for the Devil, but was called originally One Plus One, or whatever the French translation of it was. Mm-hmm. And it flashes back from these vignettes of sort of Marxist propaganda and rhetoric to the Stones literally in Olympic Studios with Jimmy Miller, their great producer, mm-hmm. as the song kind of comes together. So who wrote what? I mean, at that point, I would say from like 67, from like Jumping Jack Flash on through Let It Bleed, you know, their great like end of the 60s period.
Right.
There was a unit, you know, and then you start to get fallout. You get Brian Jones dropping out, and then you get Keith becoming a heroin addict, and you get Mick kind of married and sort of jet setting and becoming something beyond the band, you know.
Again, going back to some of the early comments on our webpage, Jerry from Queens, this is my brother Jerry, writes, Keith isn't the greatest guitarist. Mick isn't the greatest singer. Together, they are the greatest duo of all time in the rock era. I mean, there was, as you're saying, Mark, there was something more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's just incorrect and convenient, I guess, if you're reviewing a book on Keith Richards to call him the soul. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't. That's like, what about Charlie Watts? You know, I mean, he's like, if there's a heart to the band, it's that beat.
He is literally the heartbeat of the band. Yeah.
So, I mean, I just think, especially during that magical period before it starts to sort of fragment.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Stones mid-70s stuff. I know it's been maligned. It's not, you know, that period between Exile and...
It has been maligned right in this chair, in this room.
The period between Exile and Some Girls is maybe, you know, but up until then, there's definitely like... You don't know where the chemistry is coming from, but it's definitely like not coming from just one guy.
All right. Soundcheck listeners, what do you think about this whole Mick Jagger-Keith Richards rivalry? Has Mick been treated unfairly in the public eye, especially in the wake of the Keith Richards autobiography? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or post a comment with the others that are on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Again, the number 212-433-9692. And if you have a question for Mark Spitz, he is the author of the new book, Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue. Can I add another R word to that? Responsible adult. This was one of the idea of Mick kind of standing apart from all of the drug use that Keith was involved in, not the image I had of Mick Jagger.
We'll put that on the paperback, responsible. I think you're right. He's a guy who's adept at compartmentalizing. He can have days where he will behave in that way that we associate with Keith, and then, you know, completely bring it back to respectability or to practical and functional behavior. He's a dabbler, and why I wanted to put the word rambler in there is not just because of the song Midnight Rambler, but it definitely alludes to that, but that he will move mm-hmm. forward. You know, he's not going to get, there's no quicksand for Mick Jagger, you know.
What about, you know, the kind of when punk comes along, sure. there are a number of things in the book, you know, rather than taking us, you know, first this happened and then this, there are sort of signpost moments in Mick's
life. Yeah,
it's
an episodic narrative.
And
sure.
the rise of punk is easy for Keith Richards because somehow the punks look at him and say, that's our daddy. You know, he's all right. He sort of gets where we are. They look at Mick and they think, you know, 35, 40-year-old, you know, some old fart with a puffy shirt and who cares. How do we reconcile that Mick Jagger with the rebel and the rambler and the rogue?
That was a weird period, and I think that's one of the personally, that's one of my favorite. It was one of my favorite chapters to write about and learn about and talk to some of these old punks journalists, people like Chris Needs, who said, you know, that I think the punks wanted to believe in the Stones, but they just weren't together as a band. So they would, you know, save up their money and they would go see them at Earl's Court or a place like that. And they'd have this giant inflatable phallus and all this fake decadence. Meanwhile, they'd go home and they'd get jumped or there'd be rats in the street. It just didn't, mm-hmm. there was a disconnect, you know? So I think it wasn't necessarily the attitude that the punks had a problem with.
But the trappings of yeah. success that...
And that was more Mick than Keith. And Mick also made the mistake of saying in the press, back when he was giving interviews to the press, that we're punks, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same old thing in New Drag. And I think he riled them up a little bit. But they really went for him. They really targeted him. He was like... There was a famous Sex Pistols t-shirt, which was like a list of loves and hates.
Right.
And he was like number two on the hate list.
After
I'm pretty sure it was I could be wrong and if don't you know I'm acknowledging that I think it was Television was number one.
Oh yeah, it was Television and then in parentheses not the band.
Right.
Okay. Yeah,
so it was
yeah,
the BBC that... and then it was Mick.
Right. We're speaking with Mark Spitz. He is author of the new book Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue. Lisa is on the line with us from Forest Hills. Lisa, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
So what do you think? Is Mick getting the short end of the stick here in the public eye?
No. First of all, I'll disclose that I prefer Keith.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, Mick got far more publicity in the 60s and the 70s. Unfair, you know, I thought that was unfair to Keith.
Mm-hmm.
And now... Keith is getting more press and notoriety now, and so I think it's sort of just six of one, half a dozen of the other. I think it's not fair or unfair.
Well, that's an interesting point of view that you know, Mark, what we are seeing is a sort of a market correction, so to speak, after years of Mick being the sole face of the band.
Right. Well, he was the front man, and there were, you know, there was that Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones
yeah.
sort of... aspect to it, certainly in the 60s. But Keith, you know, Keith, when you look at early pictures of Keith or video footage, sometimes he looks a little geeky.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't really become quote unquote Keith until he hooked up with Anita. You know, he took
again,
her
this
Brian,
is Anita Pallenberg.
Anita Pallenberg.
Mm-hmm.
So whether, you know, and if you look at Mick always sort of seemed in some of those old David Bailey photos, he just seemed super cool and beautiful in like a new way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I guess there is an element of, but like that's kind of where I was coming from was all about balance, you know, and kind of restoring some or putting stuff out there that people who read the book might, you know, might help restore that balance. I don't have an agenda.
Right.
You know, I just think it's an interesting thing to write about.
The book is called Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue. We're speaking with the author, Mark Spitz. And in a moment, we'll continue with some of your calls and comments about the Rolling Stones frontman that we love to hate or hate to love. And we'll talk a little bit about Mick Jagger's nostalgia paradox and his solo projects. This actually is from Mick Jagger's 2001 solo record, Goddess in the Doorway.
Don't ask me where all of the pain goes. Come running with my little bag of tricks. Couldn't have nothing but to see a
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Continuing our conversation now on the history and image of the Stones frontman, Mick Jagger, with Mark Spitz, author of the new book called Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue. In the background, you're hearing Mick Jagger's new band, Super Heavy, and a song called Miracle Worker, the first single from Super Heavy's self-titled debut album, which is out now. And again, listeners, we want to hear your take on the Glimmer Twin rivalry between Mick and Keith. Why do some musicians age more gracefully in the public eye than others? Why is Mick not allowed to grow old, but Keith is, like Dylan or Chuck Berry and many others? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or leave your comment on our website, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Super Heavy. Mark, what do you think?
I kind of dig that song. I haven't heard the whole album. I bought it yesterday when it came out, but I've not
panned
listened to it
yet. In today's times.
Yes, yeah.
He has had, to call it a checkered solo career would be an understatement.
I think that a lot of what's to blame for his solo career not having the fair shake, perhaps, that it might deserve. Some of this, certainly there's an album called Wandering Spirit that he did with Rick Rubin in 1993 that bears a second listen. I think the people who know the Stones inside and out will tell you that that's probably the best solo Stones release.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think...
You mean the best solo release by any of the Rolling Stones?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah. It's MTV. In a word, it's MTV. You know, he left the band at literally the time when MTV was like 2 or 3 years into its run, and videos were getting larger and flashier, and you got people on yachts and you've got people in helicopters, and it just triggered a sort of cynicism. It wasn't nitty gritty anymore. It wasn't down and dirty. And I think that's kind of where you see a guy in his 40s trying to act like a guy, like someone in Duran Duran, or
right.
and you know, so that's kind of the seed of it, I think.
So there were some missteps along the way. But Dustin, leaving this comment here in New York on our website, has an interesting point, too. He says, I think a case can be made that there is a general feeling of malaise about old rockers in general, and it's fueled by some modern, strange, pious dada that fans have turned to. Mick is a great musician and deserves a lot of credit. He even plays a mean piano in one of the old songs whose title I cannot say on the air.
Yeah, and the harmonica, obviously, you know.
And then Frank in the East Village writes, I liked Keith Richards' book. I thought there were parts that were really funny, but there were many parts where he just sounded like an alcoholic and drug addict. The one thing that I will give him is that he did say that Mick kept things together while he was doing heroin. And that goes back to the responsible adult question.
Yeah, I certainly write about that at length in the book, that period between leaving Decca Records and being basically broke, and the 60s turning into the 70s, and the Stones really facing the possibility of being this phenomenon of the 1960s and not really crossing over into the new world, which was rapidly changing. Mick certainly captained that ship forward and got, you know, and like, you know, like any captain, maybe he got a little power happy, and certainly there's when Keith woke up from his, you know, decade long nod, he didn't like the fact that he wasn't, you know, that it wasn't a two man gig anymore, and certainly seized back some of that power. But you know, I mean, he did. We take it for granted because the Stones are still such a juggernaut that they always were like that.
But okay, now here I have to ask you. You write about Mick Jagger as almost having like retrophobia. He does not want to look back. He doesn't look in the past. He only wants to keep going forward. The guy is still touring with what is essentially an oldies show.
Well, because he knows it's good business too. You know, so there's a push pull there. You know, if you think about the big Stones tours, the ones that top every list and make $1 billion, they're usually on the back of a new album.
Right.
He doesn't just go out and play Brown Sugar. You know, and even that, they'll have like an acoustic set in the middle with like old blues songs, or they'll play something like Let It Bleed, which isn't on every greatest hits record. I mean, there's a checks and balances thing going on there in terms of the integrity of the operation.
So it's good business sense, checks and balances. This is not the language of cool, Mark.
Perhaps he overthinks things a little bit, but
All right. Now, what about, again, to come back to the book, it is episodic. And one of the episodes you focus on for most of a chapter is, in fact, Mick Jagger singing briefly in the background on Carly Simon's You're So Vain.
Yes.
Why is that a pivotal moment for you?
Well, it was a huge hit, and it was the first sort of, and it was a great, and it's a great song, and it sort of it really encapsulates a certain 1970s zeitgeist, and it still, if you hear it, it still evokes that,
mm-hmm.
like a Woody, like Annie Hall, or like a great art, a pop work of art from the 70s.
Carly Simon, You're So Vain. Mick Jagger was not credited. They both thought it would be kind of fun to have him not credited because,
right,
Mark, everybody recognized that voice.
Yes.
And it, of course, gave rise to the age-old question, is this song about Mick?
I wanted to do two things. I wanted to, going in, before I even knew what I was going to get, and I didn't know, I ended up getting an interview with Carly Simon, but I didn't know that I was going to, and I was prepared to submit it without one. Was that? That's just the key moment, because first of all, it's his first. It's a number one hit song. It's his first foray beyond the Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. It's his foray out of rock and roll and into pop, because it's not a rock song. It's a
right.
pop song, or like a singer songwriter song. And it was his. And it was in the smack in the middle of his foray into celebrity. He's not a rock star. We think of the rock world and the celebrity world as completely intertwined now. But what I learned in my research is that there were celebrities, there were rock stars. They were different sizes. Maybe Elvis kind of covered both, but by then Elvis was just a celebrity.
Right.
Mick was operating in the high and the low culture.
Let me, we have to sort of wrap up here, but
yeah.
I have an interesting question for you from Ed on Staten Island. We're talking about before, you know, who's being treated unfairly? Is it Mick? Is it Keith? Ed writes, I think it's Mick Taylor and Jimmy Miller. Now, you mentioned Jimmy Miller,
yes.
their producer. Mick Taylor was the guitarist they hired after Brian Jones.
Right.
I think it's Mick Taylor and Jimmy Miller who have been treated unfairly. Can your guest address their contributions during the Stones' golden age? Is that just part of being, you know, not out in the center of the spotlight, in the center of the stage?
I think, you know, Bill Wyman is not given a fair shake either. I mean, I think that, you know, that sound has to come from all those dudes. And Jimmy Miller is hugely important. And did you hear the Exile on Main Street, like,
reissue? Yeah.
Like, the smartest thing they ever did was go back and get Mick Taylor to play more guitar on that. Because, I mean, that was like, you know, no disrespect to Ron Wood, but losing Mick Taylor and replacing him with Ron Wood probably contributed to that period in the mid-70s where they were sort of adrift.
Well, and they not only got Mick Taylor to add some more guitar parts, Mick Jagger overdubbed some new vocals on the previously unreleased track called Plundered My Soul. This is from the reissue last year of the Stones album Exile on Main Street. We've been talking with Mark Spitz. His book is called Jagger, Rebel, Rockstar, Rambler, Rogue. Mark, great to see you again. Thanks for joining
us.
Thanks,
John. Thanks for having me back.
This is Soundcheck.